Amit Sharma, welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm catching you midway towards the end of a run of The Trouble with Asian Men, mounted by Tamasha Theatre Company, culled from lots of interviews with Asian people from across Britain, I think. Do you want to just fill people in on kind of the origins of the show and what you've ended up with?
The idea was basically to go around the country and kind of interview people who are Asian and also non-Asian about their experiences of, you know, living in Britain and stuff like that, and, you know, their kind of relationships with Asian men, if they had any. And the idea was to kind of interview them, and then once they were interviewed, these interviews were recorded, and we kind of sat down and kind of went through them and kind of edited them down into an hour's worth of a show, which is what's happening at the moment at SOHO, and we'll go on tour. And so that's basically the premise. The idea was to kind of get as much and a variety, really, of people's experiences and thoughts. You know, we've got some cracking stuff, I think. Some really, really good stuff from all sorts of people, yeah.
Do you want to give me your sort of highlights from the show?
My reaction sometimes is, you know, you kind of cringe with laughter with some of the stuff that's being said, like... There's a taxi driver from Bradford, I think it is, and the stuff that he says, and he's kind of, you know, very Neanderthal sometimes in the way he kind of thinks and the way he kind of comes across, but he's an absolutely lovely guy, you know. I'm just picking on the north there, but there's two Bradford boys who kind of in a cafe talking about, you know, life and death and, you know, kind of, you know, what it means, what your image means, you know, and having street cred and stuff like that. It's that variety really that you have with these characters. And of course there's the mummy's boys syndrome, which Asian men suffer from, which, you know, every night you ask the audience, you know, what's the trouble with Asian men? You're guaranteed, you know, they're mummy's boys. And so there's a couple of stories in there. And it's also about the relationship with the Asian men have with their mums as well. You know, one guy who kind of goes, you know, my mum's getting in the way between me and my wife, almost, you know, because she's always commenting and always making remarks to her. And I think, you know, Asian audiences love it, but there's also non-Asian audiences who kind of recognise that as well. Like a person I met yesterday, who was one of the audience members, go, you know, I want to bring my Greek boyfriend and point to him and go, that's you, do you know what I mean? So I've picked like two or three stories, but they're all so good and they're all so brilliant, really are great stories.
I mean, it is absolutely fascinating, and I don't know whether you felt that the lid was being lifted on things that weren't normally, in a way, even though it's a very public forum and people presumably who were interviewed knew that this would end up on stage. There's quite a lot of revelation, I suppose, partly because you're guaranteeing them a certain anonymity. I mean, were you surprised by how frank people were prepared to be about their lives?
Well, I mean, it's Sudha, one of the artistic directors of Tamasha, says it herself, where, you know, you put a mic in front of people and they just talk, you know, there's no holding back. They just want to, you know, I think it's probably a forum, if you like, a place for them to kind of have their say, because not enough people are going around and asking Asian men, you know, what are your concerns, you know, in today's society, you know, and stuff like that. And I think the really interesting thing I think for me has been the fact that, you know, even though we kind of live in this world where, you know, terrorism is kind of like a big thing, very few mentioned it. You know, very few mentioned kind of the whole terrorist thing, and it was more about their own personal lives and their day-to-day sort of experiences, from the washing up to, you know, the father not coming to see their work at university. You know, so I think those sort of stories that came through were great, because I think it kind of gives a different perception that, you know, not all Asian men, you know, are interested in radicalism and stuff like that. They're very, very much concerned with their everyday lives and, you know, earning a living like everyone else.
Can you just say, when did you come into the project? Were you? I mean, the material was gathered by others, and then you were. How did the process of making it happen?
The show's been done before. The show was done last year at the Arts Depot in November, I came into it for this show. Mm. I wasn't in the original production. I came into it second time round, And so the process has been quite interesting for me, because I've kind of had to play a bit of catch up, really, because we didn't really have that long a rehearsal period, I think, compared to the first time round. So I had to play a lot of catch up with that. But also the great thing was, because there was new material from the first show, there was new material for the second show as well. So it was that kind of balanced it out a bit. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because obviously you've seen it, and we've got the headphones in the ears, and it's literally we are literally talking like half a second after what we're hearing, and people kind of go to me, oh, is it real? Are people actually saying that? Are people actually saying that? And they absolutely are. We're just giving the performance, you know, completely from the voice, because I've not met any of the people. And there's only one time that I have, where one of the people who were in the show kind of came up to me, and he goes, you do me so well. And I was kind of like, what? Who's this? You know, how do I respond to that? You know, but he was fine about it. And he was kind of like, you know, it's great. It's a great show and stuff like that. And he said, I didn't recognize myself. It was my friends who kind of put me and go, that's you. You know, that's he's doing your voice. He's doing, you know, and then he realized, oh my God, that it's me. So, you know, it's great. The experience has just blown me away. Really has.
Well, I don't know how old you are. Can you say how old you are?
27.
Okay. So, you know, there's a show called The Trouble with Asian Men, and it's quite a provocative title. And how did you respond to it as a kind of thesis, in a way?
I mean, honestly, I responded to it in a very light-hearted way, really. I didn't suddenly think to myself that, you know, oh, trouble with Asian men, why are they using the word trouble, why is it Asian men, and, you know, blah blah blah. I didn't actually see it like that. I thought trouble with Asian men, it for me, it seems like a laugh, really, and that's what it is. It's a laugh. So my response completely wasn't kind of, you know, Asian man looking at it now using the word trouble, blah blah blah. I kind of completely saw the other way. And maybe that's because I know Asian men, I know what their troubles are, and, you know, how they can be troubles. So, you know, for me it was kind of an exciting thing, and trying to, you know, see the show and kind of going, are there any bits that I recognise in people where I've kind of know from my circle of, you know, family, friends or whatever, you know, are there any traits that kind of cross over to other Asian men and stuff like that. So I honestly think that it was kind of like a troublesome title or anything like that. It was kind of like, it does seem like a good old laugh.
So, okay, well, as I push this a bit further, the trouble with Asian men, you could say that that very title alone suggests a sort of confidence, I suppose, you know, which is really healthy, that there isn't a feeling that difficulty, trouble, has to be swept under the carpet, that there's got to be a kind of feel-good factor. I don't know whether you felt that the reviews for the show misunderstood it, or were more inclined to be, as well, to jump in on that aspect of it being critical, you know, the thinking, well, if there's a question here to be asked, we'll answer it ourselves. I don't know, how did you think?
Well, I mean, I think for me, I think some of the critics, some of the reviewers completely missed the point of the show. You know, I think some reviewers kind of came in with a preconceived idea, and they saw the word trouble with Asian men, and they wanted to, you know, get to know and get to see why some, you know, to terrorism, you know, lark that's going around, because, you know, we're constantly bombarded by images about terrorism, and, you know, we're seeing Asian men linked with it and stuff like that. And I think the disappointing thing for me was, like, some of the reviews said that there wasn't any of that in the show. And my question would be to them, why does there need to be, you know, because we're not trying to perpetuate an image, you know, we're not trying to stigmatize Asian men, because, I mean, the word Asian, what does that mean? I mean, how many kind of people are in that title? You know, you're talking about Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, Sri Lankans, you know, who are you talking about, you know? And to kind of say that Asian men, which one review does, you know, that they want to blow themselves up and stuff like that, for me is disappointing. It's kind of offensive, because Asian men, for me, the ones that I know, the ones that I've met, and you know, they don't really. And I think especially because the time the reviews came out was kind of near September the 11th, and, you know, the whole kind of thing about that. I think a lot of the reviewers kind of were hoping to because it was that time that something was to be dealt with. You know, we were going to go into Asia Men and find out what the actual issue was. Why do they want to blow themselves up and stuff like that? Mm. And it's just, I mean, I was kind of like, I mean, this is just a load of nonsense. I mean, if anything, for me, what I find from the show, especially from the young Asian men, is identity. That's the main thing, you know, the lack of identity, if you like, the search for, you know, the cross cultural, you know, the culture at home and the culture outside whether we're in London or we're in Birmingham or whatever, it's that cross cultural thing and where they are and, you know, where do they fit inside that, and that wasn't picked up by a lot of reviewers. It was all the thing that was picked up really was, you know, why isn't there terrorism in there? You know, because you know that's the, it should be. We're not the ones who are constantly bombarding people with our views and stuff like that. It's the image. It's the media really who are kind of saying, you know, this, that, and the other, and the, you know, Asian men are this and Asian men are that. But you've got to remember that the 7/7, the people who did it were four Asian men, and the 21st of July, the bombings that were foiled, none of those were Asian. You know, the people who did 9/11, they weren't Asian. But in this country, we're constantly being told that the terrorists in this country are Asian or of Asian descent and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, well, mate, I don't want to blow you up. I've got no, I'm not radical or anything like that. And I'm not even sure that even stigmatizing the word radical would necessarily mean that you're a terrorist. It's a battle of ideals.
I'm also inclined to say that I thought what was fascinating was indeed that those insights into, I suppose you could call it a sort of double life, you know, that you'd have to be one thing to your parents, then go out and play and, you know, hang around with your mates who could be from all kinds of backgrounds. I thought what was really fascinating was that there were allusions to, you know, radical preachers, for example, what happens to people who are particularly confused or vulnerable.
As for me, I think if we knew all the answers, then we'd be doing something about it. You know, John Reed wouldn't be going around in East London today going, you know, to the Muslim community that, you know, you've got to kind of get this evil out of your community and stuff like that. If we had all the answers, then of course we would do something about it. But I don't think it's as simple as going, it's identity, it's this, it's that, or the other. I think it's, you know, for me, it's kind of, it's a whole number of issues. And I don't have all the answers, and I don't think a lot of people do. Yeah. But one thing that I can say that, you know, that does come from the play, like I've said before, is the question of identity. Now, if you have a question of identity, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to, you know, go down a different path because you might be influenced in a certain way. That might just mean for a number of reasons, because of, you know, people around you, there's a lack of Asian people around you, or, you know, whatever. And I think even now, I mean, even fourth, fifth generation will still feel like that. You know, their identity. You know, who they are. Yeah. You know, because in some ways they're being defined by their skin color. Yeah. You know, positive discrimination and stuff like that. You know, it's all working, obviously in terms of their favor. But they're still being treated, you know, as not being British, not being. I mean, I'm not nationalistic, but you know, it's kind of. I think that's the thing. It's kind of where do these people fit in?
Do you think that it's a? I mean, for all the kind of media hype or hysteria, do you think it's not quite an interesting time and quite a positive time to be British Asian? I mean, it seems that there is a confidence and also a, although it's quite hard to define, there is an identity there, I suppose.
I think for me, I mean, I remember when the first time I came into central London after. The 7/7 and stuff like that, and I didn't feel confident. You know, I didn't feel safe. You know, someone would horn their horn at me, and I'd kind of be more alert than I probably would normally be. And I think, is there confidence? I'm not so sure because, you know. And I think it is to do with the media images and stuff like that, and the kind of real kind of right wing kind of agenda that some papers have to kind of just labelise and stigmatise. And I think we need to get away from that, and we need to make sure what we're talking about is what we're talking about. Do you know what I mean? So if this group or whatever have you are a detriment to society, then we need to say that, you know, and be clear who they are, not broaden it to kind of go, it's Asian, I think that's what I have a problem with. And I think a lot of Asian people will probably say that's what they have a problem with, because, you know, like you, like anyone else, they just want to get on with it and they just want to earn a living and, you know, have a house and whatever, you know. Some people don't, some people are socialists, and but that's fine, that's the democracy that we live in, if it is a democracy. But confidence, I'm not so sure. I at this moment in time, I don't buy into the fact that Asian men are confident in themselves, because I think they're always being prejudged, you know, whether they're going for interviews for jobs, whether they're, you know, even buying something. I mean, we live in London. Well, I live in London. I think we're very, very lucky because we have such a diverse groups of people kind of who live here and stuff like that. But I know for a fact, if I was to go somewhere where it wasn't as mixed, my awareness of who I am would be kind of heightened and stuff, and I'd kind of be much more aware of going, okay, if this situation happens, how do I deal with it? Whereas in London, I don't think I have to deal with that. So, you know, the whole thing about positive discrimination and stuff like that, I think it is key, because living in London, it's easy, and, you know, you could probably say with Birmingham and stuff like that, it's kind of easier because there is a diversity. But in some parts of England, in Britain, there isn't.
And I mean, I don't know whether there is something that can be done by an Asian theatre company about, I mean, irrespective of, I mean, because I say, partly you're saying, look, if we talk about this, we're reinforcing assumptions, but who is going to talk about these questions with greater knowledge or greater sensitivity than an Asian theatre company? So I suppose, laying aside the trouble with Asian men, should it or should it not be about ...
Yeah.
You know, do you think that, is it a time where, in a sense, you feel you have to hold your breath because anything you say will be misused or misrepresented? Or do you not think there is maybe there is a sort of burning need for the agenda to be wrested from the self-appointed commentators and handed back to, even if it's a theatre company, to say, look, this is what's going on. We have interviews of Muslim fundamentalists. We can tell you why your stereotypes are inaccurate. Do you know what I mean? I mean, do you think there is a role for...
I think even that is a problem, because I still think by doing that, you will be kind of reinforcing stereotypes. And I think with this show, what it does for me is it kind of negates that, and it kind of goes, you know, what you read in the media, you know, about Asian men isn't necessarily that, that they want to, you know, have thoughts about, you know, having suicides or, you know, kind of causing a destruction around them and stuff like that. And I think because we're constantly being told, I think, for me anyway, because we're constantly being told that this is what people want to do, that when you come to see a show by an Asian theatre company, you're expecting to see something that is on the political agenda. And I think, for me, why does that need to be? Because it's an Asian theatre company, why does it have to deal with... Why does it have the pressure to deal with, you know, with terrorism and stuff like that? You know, because, you know, it's almost like saying, well, okay, well, if there's a black theatre company, then they've got to deal with all the issues that, you know, surround black communities and stuff like that, if there are any issues, you know? And I just think that's, for me, that's quite narrow-minded, and it's kind of, why does an Asian theatre company have to take up that struggle, if you like, and why do they have to be political? Why can't they just do a show called The Trouble with Asian Men, where it's, you know, laugh a minute, and, you know, it's a really enjoyable show? You know, why does it have to become this kind of big thing where, like, you know, actually it should have terrorism in, because that's what we're faced with. Are we really faced with it? I'm not saying not to talk about it. I just question whether, because it's an Asian theatre, a British Asian theatre company, not an Asian theatre company, but a British Asian theatre company, why do they have to take responsibility in tackling that issue? You know, because if it's a British problem, then why can't any other theatre company tackle with it? But the fact that this show shows that the voices that are out there don't really think about all that sort of stuff, and it really is day to day sort of stuff. I think the company should actually be credited for that, really. And if you can sit down with a terrorist or a fundamentalist and stuff like that, great, you know. And if you can get that information, and, you know, you can have a discussion about that, I think that's great. But I take your point on that it might be more credible for a British Asian theatre company to do that, but that's assuming that they have those, they know people of that ilk, if you like, you know. And I don't think that's the case.
Perhaps you could give a potted history of your career. Where did you begin, and how do you think it's, how do you think it works, really?
Well, the way I began, I was quite lucky, actually, because I got a letter through the post while I was at university from a company called Grey Eye Theatre Company, and they were doing a course called The Missing Piece, and I kind of auditioned for that, and got interviewed for that, and I got into the course, and from there I've been kind of working. So I kind of fallen to it with a lot of luck, really, and you know, I've been working quite regularly. Again, you know, fortunate enough to be doing that. Advice, I'd say you've got to be tough-skinned, and you've got to, you know, if you've got a real passion of doing anything, you've just got to do it, you know. The course I did, which was called The Missing Piece with Grey Eye, it was kind of like a sandwich course, really. It was kind of like 6 months of doing a bit of text, a bit of Shakespeare, a bit of voice, a bit of movement, a bit of contemporary, kind of, you know, looking at scripts like Jim Cartwright's Road and stuff like that. And it was kind of like, it really was a kind of crash course, if you like, 6 months. And then at the end of it was like a month tour. Mm-hmm. And we toured Wojciech by Georg Büchner. So that was my training background, if you like. It works for different things, work for different people. Some people will say go to drama school for 3 years and do the whole thing. Personally, I would say, you know, you learn much more on the job if you're willing to learn, and you're willing to educate yourself from the people that you work with, and the people that surround you. If you can learn on the job, then that's better, because, you know, the more credits that you have on your CV, people kind of go, oh, well, you know, he's done this, he's done that. But at drama school, you know, there's nothing wrong with that if you wanted to go down that route as well.
Were you exposed to some theatre at a young age?
Yeah, I did, Christmas concerts, and, you know, I did an amateur production of Indian Summer by Harwant Baines with a local community group. So, you know, I kind of had the bug in me. It just kind of became bigger when I got that letter through the post and kind of went, actually, I want to see if I can make a career out of this. And, you know, I've kind of branched out into other things. I've done a bit of assistant directing, and I've done a bit of writing as well. So, you know, other opportunities have come from the acting side of it, really. Yeah. The Asian actors are coming out, you know, and it's a good thing. But what's really lacking, I think, in the industry, particularly, is the lack of Asian writers and the lack of Asian directors. And I think once and producers, and once you kind of start to fill that gap and you start to try to bridge that gap, you will see more work for Asian actors coming up, and more work for Asian actors kind of developing. Because, you know, if you take EastEnders, you know, the reasons why I don't think it kind of worked out for them was because people that were writing for them, you know, I'm taking a bit of a guess here, but I think the people that were writing for them weren't from an Asian background. So they didn't know the kind of intricacies and the idiosyncrasies and all that to what makes an Asian family work. And I think if you don't know that, then it's kind of hard for you to kind of make it up, because, you know, you're trying to get a family there so you can get an audience in there. And if the audience are kind of going, well, we've never seen this before, you know, what's going on? No, then they'll switch off. And I think that's a lack of Asian writers, producers and directors that are on board. I think once that starts to develop, because the Asian actor field is starting to develop, and there's more Asian, hopefully more Asian actors that are on the scene and are coming through, it's a case of, you know, it's a case of support, because I think you can find Asian writers and they're out there, but I think what happens is they kind of get lost, you know. So you may have like your youth theatres or your youth groups, and, you know, you get people coming in and, you know, they get involved with drama and stuff like that. But I think from the ages of maybe 16 to 20 or whatever, they kind of get lost. And that could be a number of reasons. That might not be that it's the company's fault. It might just be because, you know, the people who are on the course kind of go, you know, I'd rather drink and shag around or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's a number of things. But I think if they're lost and they're not coming through the system in that period, then it's hard for them to get back onto the road, because, you know, they'll be combating against people who have kind of gone through the process. And I think institutions have to look at, you know, what they're doing to fill that gap, because I don't think enough is being done. I don't think enough opportunities are being created. And the key thing is, once those opportunities are created, it's it can't be, oh well, for that project that's it. It's got to be an ongoing thing. It's got to be an ongoing development. On the subject of audiences, what's been great about this show has been the dominance of Asian people in the audience, and especially Asian women that have come to probably come to see, you know, what the problem is. But for me, it's been really refreshing. You know, Soho Theatre, where we're being based at the moment, are probably doing, you know, somersaults, because, you know, they've got a real diverse people coming in that who may not come to Soho Theatre before, you know. And, you know, it's a good thing that they're coming to see this show. But the key thing now, which is the whole Asian writer thing as well, is to keep that ongoing. Is not to go, well, we've had this show, we feel that remit. It's kind of going, okay, how do we keep these audiences here? How do we keep these Asian writers here? How do we develop these Asian producers or whatever? How do we keep this development ongoing, so that once they are established, once they are in, they can then mentor the next generation. And I think that's, for me, that's a way I would kind of go about combating it, and kind of going, okay, let's try it this way. Let's see if we can do it this way. And if you seriously sit down and you kind of go, okay, this is what we're lacking, and you've got a real passion to do something about it, then you will do it. And I'm not sure if companies out there have that passion, and they probably do care, but it's kind of having that drive to kind of go out and kind of go, right, we're going to do something about this now, because, you know, because I think if you do have it, then you can. I think the key is, like I say, it's great the Asian actors are coming out, but where are the Asian writers, where are the Asian directors, where are the Asian producers? That's something that needs to be looked at by not only Tamasha and Tara, but the other companies as well, to see what programs can they set up to deal with that. Yeah.
Just remind people where this is, where they can catch up with this show, if you can remember that. I don't know.
Well, yeah. Soho sold out. So the 23rd, and then we go to Huddersfield for 2 nights at the Lawrence Batley Theatre, and then I think we're back in London doing a mini tour at Slough, the West Wing. We're at Luton Hat Factory, we're at the Windsor Arts Centre, and then we head off to Birmingham for a couple of nights, and then we're back down into London, Croydon, the Clock Tower, and then we finish up in Bolton, which I'm really looking forward to going to the north with this show, because I think we're going to get, you know, a real rowdy audience to what we're experiencing in London at the moment. Yeah, so yeah, it's finishing on the 20th of October up in Bolton. So in between now and then, we're kind of up, down, and all around.
Thank you very much for your time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.